It's the most important instrument because it's the first sound you hear as a human being. It'll be your first sound and it'll be your last sound. So, you know, I mean, that's the heartbeat. That is your first conversation that you will have as a human, is the beat of that heart. The mother and the child are having a conversation as a mother is carrying the child because of the way that the heart beat. The heart is an emotional tool. And because it is an emotional tool, it just beats as to the emotions. So when the mother's happy, the child gets the emotional rhythm. When the mother's upset, the child gets the upset rhythm. So can you imagine a mother pregnant and having an argument with the baby daddy? So what's happening to that heart? What sound or what conversation is going into that baby? So that's what makes it so important, you know?
Your organization, River City Drum Corps, it was established in 1990. It has had hundreds of children, hundreds, come through its doors over the years. What is it about the Drum Corps, though, that has made it synonymous with both a musical arts group, at the same time an outreach group for at-risk youth? It seems that it plays both roles in the mindset of people I've talked to about the organization.
Well, the main reason is we take all comers. We take anybody. You know, if you have the desire to come and the ability to stay, not the ability to play, it's the ability to stay. Because the longer you stay, we can teach you to play. And see, and that's what mystifies the people is how do you get them to do it? It's the ability. It's the ability to stay. Because once you stay, you know, you're starting to tap back into that first rhythm that you heard, is that heartbeat. And so once we tap into that heartbeat and tap into that spirit, then the rest is easy.
Because you have people who are, you know, children aged 2 to 18, I've seen.
Yes.
In that organization. And the emphasis isn't necessarily on being able to play at the top level, but wherever you can mature and however fast you can mature. Some are better than others, obviously.
The reason we don't stress performance, because performance is 3 minutes. Performance is 2 minutes. Performance is something that just goes, you know, it happens. It's just a moment. It's just a moment in time. Now, to get to that moment in time is where all the work is done, where all you do all of your socialization, where you do all of your behavior, where you do your bonding, where you do your mentorship. Once you are able to bond, socialize, and mentorship, the performance is the last piece, and that's the easy piece.
You were in the state of California recently, where you received a national award, national recognition. The United States Artist Fellowship awarded you a $50,000 prize and put you in a group of top-tier artists as well. What does that mean for your local work, to have that sort of national recognition? Is it something that is in your rear view, or is it maybe sends to you a message of, I finally have arrived? What's the message for you from that?
The message for me is, and what it's always been, is about the work, okay? I'm going to do this work whether I got the $50,000 or not. But what this says to me is, why is it that I can get that kind of support outside the country and not in the country? Okay. So, you know, the value of that for me is, what that really lets me know, that I've always been right. It's about the work. Whether people in this town recognize it or whether people in this town want to give me funds to do what I do, it's about the work. So you continue to do the work, and as you continue to do the work, somebody's going to tell you how good your work is.
And that's, you were reading my mind, because back here in Louisville, you've been an outspoken proponent for the arts. But as you've just pointed out, it isn't always necessarily rewarded or held in the same prestige or light that it is in other parts of the country. You've also pointed out that there isn't always adequate funding, despite the high praise sometimes you hear in the city of Louisville. There isn't always the high funding. Mayor Greg Fisher, his proposed spending plan earlier this year, for instance, cut the arts by about $50,000.
Well, the reason they cut the arts because they don't see that it has a value, and they really don't see that it has a value beyond high classical Western European style art. Okay, and so therefore they don't understand that if it wasn't for us artists, there would be no world. Look at the shirt you got on. Somebody somewhere designed that shirt. Look at the cars you drive. Somebody somewhere designed that shirt. Everything. Look at that computer. Somebody somewhere designed that shirt. Just think the person that designed that logo. It was an artist. But, you know, because it's not something you can put your hands on. You can't say at the end of the game there was a winner and there was a loser.
You know, when you think of it that way, then art is all around us. I mean, the redesigns for a professional basketball team or professional football team jerseys, that's art.
That's art. That's art. But they don't see it as art.
You said something also about how the art that's supported is usually Eurocentric art. One thing I definitely notice about you and your advocacy is that River City Drum Corps, I mean, the drum itself is, its origins are in Africa.
Yes.
As are most things on planet Earth. And a lot of your advocacy, and the work you do and the organization you represent and your personal swagger, let's just be honest, I mean,
yes,
has an African aesthetic to it. Is part of that an issue too here? I mean, you're in Kentucky. You're not in California. You're not in a place that's a more diverse part of the country. Is that part of the problem?
That is a part of the problem. See, because in Kentucky and in the South, as quiet as it's kept, they want to hold on to their tradition. Their tradition. And their tradition was people have their places. And you need to stay in your place. Tradition. So, you know, so therefore, you know, and for me, a little story for me, a short story. I grew up in Portland. And when I grew up in Portland, it was 99.9% white. Okay? I realized that it's really not about color, it's about class. Because I watched how the white people in Portland divide themselves up into classes and treat each other just like dirt, treated us just like they treat black people. It's like, oh my God, oh my God. You know, so, you know, that's, so tradition, the tradition of Kentucky is the haves and the have-nots. That's that plantation type tradition. You know, so the high art was the classical things, okay? And then you got your banjo players, and then it goes down the line, you know? So you understand what I'm talking about.
Earlier this year, you spoke out during a Metro Council budget hearing. You spoke out particularly on how the city could refurbish the Whiskey Row buildings, but not the arts. And you said this, quote, "We can sit here and give some investors $1.5 million to renovate 7 buildings, and then you give them another $500,000. Just think if you could take that $500,000 and give it to the people who actually are in the trenches doing the work.
Think about the fund for the arts. They take $9 million out of this community. They take $9 million out of this community and probably 99.9% of that money goes to supporting Western European style art. For people who live in...
So despite Louisville's reputation of keep Louisville weird, we're alternative, off the beaten path,
we still support high-class European art. You know? Did you have the opportunity to see the Dance Theater of Harlem?
Mm-mm.
Oh, man, you missed it. You missed the show. All right, now. All right, so now, you know, the show, everyone's in the theater and everyone's watching the classical ballet. And the show, I mean, and the audience is frozen. You hear me? But the second half of the show, they open up with James Brown. They open up with Aretha Franklin. And the crowd went wild. It was like day and night. You hear me? Not just everybody. I mean, the whole place erupted. Why did it erupt? It erupted because the audience was able to make a connection to what was on the stage. When the classical ballet was on the stage, people couldn't make a connection to it. was too slow. It was too methodical. It didn't have life. It didn't have rhythm. Not that I'm saying that that's not bad, but what I'm saying is the audience was unable to connect to that art form. And then when you look at it, look at their audiences. All the money they get. If I could just get a third of that money, just think what I could do. Just think what the people in the trenches could do.
Being a public figure, I'm betting for you, it's difficult to balance your advocacy and your private life. And tell me if I'm getting too personal here, but you faced some personal tragedies in recent years. I know some people who knew your late wife, Zambia, who co-founded River City Drum Corps with you. How has that affected your work?
The loss of Zambia, it's affected a tremendous amount. You know, I mean, it's you know, you have a pusher. You know, she was my soundboard. You know, because of what you said as my advocacy and my personal life, you know, she was the one that said, Ed, you can't say this. Ed, you can't do this. Ed, you need to be over here. Ed, you need to be quiet. You know, Ed, you need to do this.
And she's the person who seems to be in both of those, both your advocacy and your personal life.
Exactly. So now, I'm going on with my life, but I'm going on with it at a very, very slow rate. You know, my ideals come, but, you know, I'm just, you know, it's like what Zambia taught me was to not say this word, say these words, I don't know. Okay, Zambia was always took the I don't know out of my life. And now it's kind of like I'm back to I don't know. But the one thing that I do know is I do know that I still have to do the work.
Because, I mean, you all, to be quite honest, were synonymous with African music here in Louisville, that advocacy work. I like to ask, though, I mean, and I know another issue that came up, and this is something you said publicly in the Courier Journal, because I asked you about that because of your comments in the Courier. You said you want to create an institution with River City Drum Corps that goes beyond yourself. And you said, quote, I'll ride off into the sunset and then I'll be with my wife. That sounds sad initially, but it doesn't seem wholly sad, is it?
No. No, it's not sad, because what you must realize is all of us come here with a purpose. Everybody, my thought is that everyone comes here with a purpose, all right? Your reason for being is to find that purpose, you know, and unless you find that purpose, you wander, so your life doesn't have meaning. And then eventually you pass, and then in my way of thinking, which is probably crazy, then you got to come back and do it again. You know, because we feel that there are parallel worlds, okay? And, you know, Zambia's over in this parallel world still guiding me to do this and to do that. I know, because only she could do them kind of things. You know, I can only tune into that. And in my mind, she served her purpose. She don't have to come back here. She don't, because she, you know, because we are, all come with that purpose, and we need to do it. Until I did River City Drum Corps, I used to build wreck cars. I used to work in atomic energy plant building bombs. You know, I worked in the National Harvester. I worked at Jeff Boat Welding, you know, and I worked at the Boys and Girls Club. I was a photographer, you know, but this was my calling. And when the Salvation Army fired me, I said, I'm done. She said, no, you're not. And she just stayed on me and on me and on me and on me.
She was the key to that.
Exactly. She was the key. Come to my class, do this workshop, and then if you do that, I won't bother you no more. So I came to her class, did a workshop, and the light went off. And when I started this work, Philip, I did all of my work in Eastern Kentucky. In the mountains. In some places, I'd be the only black thing in the whole building. In some places, I would go and I made sure that I got in my hotel room before it got dark and didn't come back out.
Another personal story involving you involves your late granddaughter. Makiba Lee, and I'm not sure if everyone knows this. We've talked about this on the show before. She was the victim of homicide in that shooting spree in the Parkland neighborhood. And the reason I bring that up, I recall seeing you at a couple of community forums, public meetings. Sometimes there were just regular folks there. Sometimes the mayor, police chief were there. You were carrying the staff.
Yes.
And the staff had police tape on it.
Yes.
Explain that to me. Like, what did that mean? I don't really remember you. Maybe I was not there when you explained sometimes, but what did that mean? Why were you carrying that?
That tape was something that Ben, I stumbled up on this. We had did a performance at the Muhammad Ali Center. And, you know, we children got to fooling around. And, you know, I always let them, you know, just get their feel of wherever we're at. And so we got that feel. And so we came down St. Catherine. Yeah, St. Catherine becomes Oak. And at 17th and Oak, there had just been a shooting. And they had just put, I think that's when the son killed the father, or the father killed the son. It was a family deal that went bad, and the family members ended up shooting each other, all right? And so just, and if we'd left when we were supposed to, we'd have got right in the middle of that. But, you know, we didn't. And when I got there, there was this yellow tape. So they marked, you know, they marked it off, and then we had to turn and go around. So I didn't want to go to the scene because I just didn't. I just didn't. I did not want, when my daughter called me, I said, I don't want my last memory of Makiba was to see her on 32nd Street with a sheet over. So when I got there, this was Sunday. So they didn't clean the scene up. They didn't finish cleaning the scene up until Sunday. So after I left church, you know, I just went by there and they were still cleaning it up. And as I did it, then I watched the a police woman just, you know, pull up the tape and open the street up just like as well. You know, y'all, we back in the business, streets open. So I said, can I have that tape? And when I took that tape, you know, basically, you know, being in as an African, you know, how we make staff and we deal in symbolism, you know, that is the symbolism of this yellow tape is all over the place. And it's, and whenever you see that yellow tape, you know, it's usually someone's dying.
And it's so, never a good thing.
No, it's not a good thing. Not a good thing whenever you see that yellow tape. So, you know, the significance of that thing is that all we are? Is that all our children are? Just yellow tape? Is that all black males are? Is just yellow tape?
As an activist and who deals with at-risk youth, and I believe you said this before as well, you see both how institutional discrimination, some would say the lingering effects of institutional racism, and personal responsibility create some of these tragedies. But isn't it different in the situation because this isn't a community issue for you anymore? It was a community issue in the way you were dealing with it, but now, you know, your granddaughter isn't a statistic. She's not even a story in the media. She's your family.
Yes.
Is it difficult, and maybe a little bit of a sting when you hear people talk about it, even if not directly to you, about the situation when it involves a family member? It's a bit different than before, right?
Yeah, it's very much different. It's very much different because, you know, not as you said, it's personal. Especially when we as parents and grandparents do everything we can to try to save them. You know, Zambia and I and her mother, toward the end, did everything we could to save her. But whatever we tried, she would always say no. You know, so how, you know, it goes down to like, is how can I continue to save or fight for other children when I couldn't save my own? Why? What's the reason? Why should I continue this when, you know, when you have some people, I see it in their eyes. Some people say, well, you couldn't even save your own child, your own granddaughter. I've heard this. You couldn't even save your own granddaughter. Well, what makes you think you can save them? So that, you know, that question always comes up in my mouth, you know, in the back of my mind. Do I continue to do this work? I couldn't save Makiba maybe that's the reason why I need to continue to do it. You know, I couldn't save Makeba, but I can save someone else.
I remember you saying you were worried nothing would change. Are you pleased with the results of Mayor Fisher's Violence Prevention Task Force, which created a response and a report which was directly linked to that shooting? Are you pleased with that?
Oh, boy. That's tough. Well, I'm gonna say, here's what I'm gonna say. I'm gonna say the jury is still out. The jury is still out, because what I'm gonna do is I'm going to give them an opportunity. We'll see a year from now. Okay, because basically what I see is a lot of talk. I see a lot of talk. I see a lot of people who he put on that task force who don't even like children. And I know that I know you're probably saying that's hard for you to say, but the reason that I can say that is, and form this opinion, is wherever I'm at over the 20 years, a lot of those people I've never seen. I've never seen them in the trenches. You know, this is a big sports town. Where's the football game won at? Where's Strong's football game won at?
I heard somewhere you were thinking about retiring. Can Ed White actually retire, or is that a bunch of talk?
Woo! I'm going to retire, man.
I don't believe it.
I'm going to retire.
How can you retire from being you?
Well, sometimes
you might not be in that position, but how are you going to retire from being Ed White?
How am I going to retire from being Ed White?
Can't retire from being Ed White, man.
Well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to. Why? Here's the reason why. The reason I have to retire is all movements are ran by young people. The civil rights movement was just think how old Martin was. He was 26 years old. From 26 to 39, I'm 60 years old. Who's going to listen to this old man?
Well, Ed White, we certainly have. Thanks for joining me.